The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The Irish Hospitals Consultants Association is having their 36th annual conference today. It's on Mount Juliet in Kilkenny. My next guest, Dr. Suzanne Crowe, is President of the Medical Council of Ireland. She works as a consultant in paediatric intensive care in Crumlin. She's going to be discussing the experience of those working in the hospital setting, and she joins me now. Good morning, Suzanne.
Good morning.
I suppose, given the paediatric in your title, where we should start with is, if you're looking at the current state of Irish medicine, how is your frustration in respect to the Children's Hospital?
I think everybody is very frustrated around the pace. We had obviously hoped to be there quite a few years ago, and we're still waiting.
Does it impact on patient care? Does the fact that we don't have a world-class facility or a best-in-class facility, and that we are working with fairly constrained resources in Crumlin, Temple Street, Tallaght and Connolly, does that make a difference to what you can do for patients?
It does. Now, I'd have to emphasise that the care is good, and I think we should be proud of that, what staff managed to do in really quite difficult circumstances. But infrastructurally, we're very confined. We're a whole bunch of porta cabins stacked on top of each other. And that element could be better. But also you have services scattered across three different sites. And that's not ideal, having to transfer a very sick child between one hospital and another to access different services.
And is that the way that it tends to happen? I wasn't sure if it was that you had similar services available in all of those facilities, or if it was that certain specialisms required transfer. But it's the latter.
It's the latter because, well, previously we were 4 million people and we're now nearly 5 million, I think, but we didn't really have the population to justify two sets of really specialist services like cardiac surgery or neurosurgery.
And for as somebody working at the front line, what assurances, if any, have you been given about deadline, or are you in the same boat as the rest of us?
We're in the same boat as the rest of you, of the country. There are integration projects going on to bring together teams and to get people working together. And that is helping. So my speciality is intensive care medicine. So we work very closely with our partners across the city.
And were you of the view that the James's site was the correct site? I know that ship has long since sailed, but were you a Mater fan, or did you want Greenfield or James's?
I think a Greenfield site would have been the best. If you look at any hospital that's been built in this country over the last 30 or 40 years, within days of opening, and I'm thinking of Tallaght Hospital where I worked for many years, within days of opening, the porta cabins began to arrive. Because there are services that don't even exist now that will be there in 10 or 20 years. And it's very difficult to actually envisage that. But all hospitals need site, need room for expansion. And also, I think an emphasis on gardens and research and study and just a beautiful campus where people could have lived and we could have, I suppose, developed.
And the argument for co-location with an adult teaching hospital, that doesn't overwhelm that?
Well, I work predominantly with very sick, small babies, so I'm a little bit biased, I suppose, towards the baby aspect. But I can tell you that the number of sick mothers that are transferred out of maternity hospitals to adult hospitals is very small, whereas every single day, small babies shuttle around the city in incubators from maternity hospitals to the children's hospital. So I have to say my preference would have been co-locating a maternity hospital with a children's hospital, connecting them so that babies don't have to go outside in ambulances, that they can go safely between one hospital and the other. Now, I know that is the plan in the future, that a maternity hospital will join the St. James's site, but it would have been a priority, I think, for me. Children do need to move between paediatric services and adult services when they grow up. But that's usually done when kids are stable. So it's not done on an emergency basis. You'd never transfer really one from the other in an emergency basis. But when a child is stable, they will transition at the age of 16 to adult services.
Children's Hospital, obviously, one of the major issues in your specialty, the general issues that then are applying across the profession, I assume recruitment being one of them, waiting lists still at the top of everybody's mind?
Recruitment is one thing, but waiting lists, I suppose we've inherited big waiting lists post-COVID. So the profession, all healthcare professionals, were thrown into a situation where we couldn't really recover, I suppose, from what we experienced during COVID. We were immediately into catch up on waiting lists. So that has created, I think, a lot of pressure within the system.
Would you have any belief that we will ever get to a point where that issue will be resolved? Because whatever about COVID exacerbating it, it was a hardy perennial for decades before COVID.
True, it's too easy to blame COVID on a lot of our woes. Waiting lists will always be there for some procedures, I think, and some elements of care. But I'd be very hopeful that it is possible to fix the problem.
And do you believe that we are on the track to do so?
I do, yes. Yeah, you have to be hopeful to be in a role like this.
What then about recruitment? Because we've heard an awful lot, both pre-COVID and then significantly after it, about the difficulty that there is in getting qualified doctors, qualified medical professions to practice in Ireland rather than to head off to Australia for better money and better quality of life.
The quality of life thing is a big issue within all of the healthcare professions. People don't want to work 60, 70, 90 hours a week anymore. And they're right. I think what we used to do was crazy. So people are moving and making lifestyle choices. But we can address that here in Ireland and bring people back. The majority, and I think the figure is about, at about 70% of doctors who leave in the early years after qualification, do come back within the following 5 years. So many people will come back. Now, their main reason for coming back is family. Irish people want to be back with their families and rear their children in Ireland. So I wouldn't like to say that they're only coming back to work in the health service and for the work. They're largely coming back because they want to be, you know, with their families.
And is that a dynamic that we should simply accept, just to take it for granted that people will go off, do a number of years overseas and return? Or should we be trying to battle that exodus?
It's a good thing in some ways that people will travel to develop their skills. As I said, we are a small population and there will be some specialities and experiences that you will see abroad. And it's great to work in another healthcare system. I think you bring back a lot of positive ways of working when you do that. At the same time, we would want that to be kind of a low level. And that there'd be an understanding that people would come back. And that works well for lots of different countries. It did reach a peak in the last couple of years, and that's concerning. And I think we need to turn that peak around.
Do you believe it is still an attractive profession?
It is. However, I think people's expectations have changed. So as it has improved, our expectations have changed, and we're still chasing that a little bit. So when I began in medicine, which is nearly 30 years ago, our expectations were really low. We were pretty happy to just be working. And that's just not the attitude now. So I think expectations.
So what is the attitude now?
Well, people want to be working, but they also want to be at home with their families. They want career progression. They want good pay and good working conditions. They want access to food overnight and a place to rest. So very basic things like that. I think the other thing that has changed is the public expectations are very high. So people struggle, I suppose, to accept the fact that not all medical conditions can be fixed and it's not possible to reverse every illness process. And, you know, that's a struggle, I think, sometimes in terms of a mismatch between what the public think is possible within healthcare and within medicine and what we can actually deliver.
As in that there are people who, when they or a family member receive a diagnosis, they are receiving treatment, they believe it is a failure of the system rather than the underlying disease.
It's part of a normal grief reaction. You know, you're losing somebody that you love, or you yourself are heading towards the end of your life. And, you know, part of grief is often anger. And it's very easy in some ways for that anger to focus on the people delivering the care.
Interestingly, despite some of the pressures that doctors would be under, there was a survey done by the Irish Hospital Consultants Association that said that something to the order of 70% of hospital consultants had fairly high levels of job satisfaction. Is that to do with seniority or is that to do with the job? As in, anybody who has fairly good control over their own lives tends to express relatively good job satisfaction, and consultants have that. So is it the job or is it the power?
I think it's the job, to be honest. And you're right. If you were to go to any other industry and levels of satisfaction were that high, people would think that, you know, that was a huge achievement. It's because the basic fulfillment is fantastic. There is nothing better than looking after people. There genuinely isn't. It is a wonderful profession to be in from that point of view. It's really satisfying to go home at the end of the day and feel like you genuinely made a difference to someone.
Setting aside the difficulties, because I assume you talked about pediatric intensive care. I assume that means that you must experience deeply harrowing cases on a fairly regular basis as well.
Yes, it does. But I suppose our training prepares us for a lot of that. And the way we make sense of it is by taking strength from, you know, what does go well and the patients who do recover. And also there can be a lot of satisfaction around looking after someone at the end of their life, harrowing though it is, by really being present and really caring for the family and the patient.
The other thing that survey revealed was that a very low percentage, I think it was about 16% of consultants, felt that they were involved in the sort of the managerial and strategic decision-making operation of the facilities in which they worked. Does that mean that that sort of classic schism between hospital management and medical practice continues unabated?
It's a choice I suppose a lot of people will make, and not everybody wants to be involved in that aspect. It's not an embedded part of our training. We are trained to lead teams and there'd be a lot of team working, but once you start moving out of your own medical team or your own area, that requires a bit of a different skill set, I think. And for some doctors that comes quite easily and other doctors it's not such a good fit. So I think it would be a mistake to think that every consultant wants to be involved in the management of services. But I suppose the management of services needs to come with a level of autonomy, and you would have to have some control over your budget so that you really could feel that your decisions, you could be fully accountable for your decisions and that your decisions would make a difference.
Maybe I misread it, but I got the sense that it wasn't just that consultants felt that they wanted to be involved in the actual direct management, but that their voices weren't being heard or that they weren't being asked to contribute to policy and strategic decisions in hospital facilities.
Well, that's true. Yes, I do think that there is a growing disconnect between those who make decisions right at the top, if you could imagine, and those who are on the front line. And I think the voices of staff on the front line is really important to capture, because we actually know what will make a difference to patient care. And then the voices of patients, that's really important too.
We obviously have an election coming up. You're going to be talking today at the meeting about the lived experience, the frontline experience of being a paediatric consultant. If you were sending a message on behalf of either the Medical Council or the Irish Hospitals Consultants Association to the minister on the eve of the election, what is it that you would want the government to do or to change in respect of policy for your profession?
I'd love to see health policy being separated out from politics. I think there are models for that. If you think of the specially established child poverty unit in the office of the Taoiseach, that's a cross-party policy agreement and is therefore less affected by the winds of elections. And I think we could do a lot more of that cross-party work so that health policy could continue then without the vagaries of which party is in power at any one time, because that level of decision making by politicians can really make a difference. You know, if you have a politician with specific responsibility for a particular portfolio, it can really make a difference in terms of implementing policy. So we have huge amounts of policy that's developed in this country, endless numbers of reports with recommendations. Yes, I see you raising your eyes to heaven. But it's actioning those recommendations is really what takes someone at the cabinet or cross-party agreement.
Lastly, how do you rate the service that we provide across the board in Ireland compared to our international peers?
I think it's very good. And I have worked internationally. And I think patients are generally very happy with the service that we get. There is an access problem. Once you get into the service is really good. but access is a major issue and people are waiting too long for many services, particularly mental health services.
Is there also a cohesion problem? Because often patients will say that in the individual silo of specific practice area, they got very good treatment, but trying to find somebody responsible for the total provision of their care, that sort of holistic care, can be challenging.
Yes, no, you're so right. It's that old Irish expression of you wouldn't start from here. In ways, you'd like to completely scrap a lot of services. And I don't want to call out any one service in particular, but you'd like to scrap a service and almost start again. We also have an excessive reliance on NGOs and charities to provide a lot of services. And I think that's not an ideal model, both from a funding and accountability perspective, but also just providing sustainable service that fits in with policy.
Suzanne, thank you very much. That is Dr. Suzanne Crowe, who is President of the Medical Council, and she's going to be speaking at the Irish Hospital Consultants Association's 36th annual conference taking place today in Mount Juliet.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.